today on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
The VA's National Lung Cancer Screening Program is very unique. It was started back in 2012 and was one of the first national lung cancer screening programs, certainly in the U.S. and likely internationally as well.
Today, Drs. Call and Ed Gunsoye join the podcast to discuss veterans' interstitial lung disease, risk prediction models, and early detection in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Welcome back to our conversation about veterans and interstitial lung disease.
I'm Deji Adegunsoye. I'm an assistant professor of medicine and the scientific director of the Interstitial Lung Disease Program at the University of Chicago. I also serve on the Committee on Clinical Pharmacology and Pharmacogenomics within the Biological Services Division and the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine.
And I'm Bhavika Kaul. I'm an assistant professor of pulmonary and critical care medicine and health services research at Baylor College of Medicine. I also serve as a core investigator with the Health Policy, Quality, and Informatics program at the VA Center for Innovation in Quality, Effectiveness, and Safety.
I was going to ask you this as well. Just thinking about the National Lung Cancer Screening Program, that's really widespread, not just in the U.S. as well, but it's been a model for other countries as well in terms of lung cancer screening. How does that program locally fit into your efforts to identify and track patients with ILD or pulmonary fibrosis, not just in Houston, but also across the entire country? Specifically, are there other high-risk groups of patients in the VA nationally that we should be focusing on as well?
Well, thank you so much for asking that very thoughtful question, Deji. You know, the VA's National Lung Cancer Screening Program is very unique. It was started back in 2012 and was one of the first national lung cancer screening programs, certainly in the U.S. and likely internationally as well. And what we've realized in looking at that data is it's actually a very unique opportunity to solve multiple problems at the same time. What we know from the VA's lung cancer screening data is up to 20% of patients of veterans undergoing lung cancer screening may have findings of ILAs, interstitial lung abnormalities, on their lung cancer screening CT scans. And so you can imagine in a healthcare system where there's a high prevalence of tobacco use, right? So in the VA, we have 1.4 million vets eligible for lung cancer screening. Some estimates say 1.2. Even if we take the 1.2 million number, 20-25% of that is still 300,000 patients a year with potential interstitial lung abnormalities. And so that's a unique opportunity to plug those patients into care in a more timely manner. And at the same time, one of my passions is trying to figure out how to optimize VA healthcare system resources. One of the things we've been trying to figure out is also how to appropriately triage those patients, because not all of those patients can be seen simultaneously. And so in the VA, one of the unique opportunities we'll have is because we have 10 years of longitudinal data, we'll start to be able to answer the questions about ILA progression and risk triage. And then the other thing that you had mentioned was, are there other high-risk groups of patients in the VA nationally? Certainly there are. We are exploring new partnerships with the Airborne Hazard Burn Pit Center of Excellence. I have a grant funded by them to start to do radiomic phenotyping using quantitative CT to better understand the epidemiology of pulmonary fibrosis in those patients and to better understand which of those veterans are likely to progress and ultimately be able to plug them into care in a more timely manner. So to answer your question, what we're trying to do is realize that the VA's lung cancer screening program is a very unique population and can hopefully solve multiple problems for the VA simultaneously. It's not surprising that the burden of ILA and ILD is so high in that population because, as you know, the risk factors for pulmonary fibrosis and lung cancer overlap, namely the age and tobacco use risk factors.
That sounds exciting and super interesting. I think it also, as you alluded to, is a useful, very, very useful resource for better understanding disease pathophysiology, but also helping us better understand possible outcomes that could differ based on our interventions, just from this wonderful registry you talked about. Let's take a step back, and I was going to ask you, you've been involved in clinical trials, pragmatic clinical trials. For example, the one I will talk about is the new trial that you're helping to lead, the one that looks at evaluating evaluating metformin for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and also exploring the use of inexpensive repurposed medicines for this disease. Now, what's the appeal of this approach to you? What are some of the key lessons you've learned so far in the study design for this clinical trial and the approach, this approach that's unique?
Sure, absolutely. So the trial you're referring to is called MAVERICK. I think that's partly why we got funded for it, because we picked a catchy trial title. But it stands for Metformin to Attenuate Progressive Respiratory Decline in Idiopathic Pulmonary Fibrosis, MAVERICK-IPF. And there's a couple of very unique features of this trial. One is that it's a pragmatic clinical trial testing a commonly available medication, metformin, which is widely used for diabetes, but seeing if there is a potential use in pulmonary fibrosis. And this is based on promising preclinical data, animal model data, suggesting that there may be some antifibrotic properties to metformin, and then also observational data showing that metformin has a decreased risk of mortality. It has a mortality benefit in patients who have idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis from observational retrospective studies. And so that was the impetus, the biological rationale for doing this study. But under the additional feature of this study is that it's going to be the first time where we are integrating pulmonary fibrosis foundations of centers of excellence, the PFF centers of excellence, which have historically participated in many pulmonary fibrosis trials in the past, but we are going to be integrating those with VA medical centers. So this is going to be the first pulmonary fibrosis clinical trial to recruit directly from the VA medical centers. And so the trial officially started August 15th of this year. We have a one-year planning phase followed by a four-year clinical trial. The primary endpoint we're actually looking at is a composite clinical endpoint, so time to death, respiratory hospitalization, or lung transplant. And then we have a lot of exciting secondary endpoints we're looking at as well. Physiology, so pulmonary function test decline. We're looking to add exploratory biomarkers as well, both imaging and blood-based biomarkers. And the last very unique thing about this trial is that we're using a proteomic-based enrichment strategy. What that means is at the time of screening, we are drawing blood from patients and looking at their proteomic signatures. And patients who have what we're calling a high-risk proteomic signature, that means higher likelihood of mortality, higher likelihood of respiratory hospitalizations, et cetera, we are randomizing those patients to metformin versus placebo. The patients with a low-risk proteomic signature, we're following clinically, but those patients are not necessarily being randomized. And the reason for that is to try to figure out, one, if metformin will have a benefit on that high-risk proteomic signature, and to also increase the event rate within a finite clinical trial period. So to answer your question, yes, we're very excited about MAVERICK. It's the first pulmonary fibrosis trial that will involve both VAs and non-VAs, has a very exciting proteomic biomarker enrichment strategy, and it's really pushing the field towards seeing if there are already medications that we may have in our toolbox that we could repurpose for fibrotic lung disease and shorten the time period between discovery and implementation.
That's exciting. I mean, thinking about an easily accessible drug that's really affordable to treat a fatal disease condition, it doesn't get better than that. I'm sure you're hopeful, like I am, that the results of this trial will really be a maverick in the landscape of IPF, right? Positive outcomes that really transform the landscape. So let's shift a bit to your current work. Let's turn to your current study on improving timely access to care for veterans with pulmonary fibrosis that have been detected on lung cancer screening. So what are the goals of this study, and how does it build on the themes that we've discussed today?
Absolutely. Well, it builds nicely on some of the conversations we were having about lung cancer screening in the VA. So this specific grant and project is really focused on trying to solve the problem of how do we appropriately risk stratify and triage veterans who are found to have interstitial lung abnormalities, or ILA, on their lung cancer screening CT. So there's three goals for this five-year study. So it's going to be happening over the next few years. One is we are going to take retrospective data from 2012 to 2024, so all the veterans who were enrolled in the lung cancer screening program during that 10-year time period, and we're having annual CT scans, we are going to identify ILAs, interstitial lung abnormalities, using novel quantitative CT measures, so AI of CT scans, to quantify the percentage of abnormality. We're going to follow those veterans basically from 2012 to 2024 and see which patients have progression of ILA. With that, we'll be able to first understand the risk factors, but really the goal is to be able to develop a risk prediction model for ILA progression and ILA mortality, extracting the features, the radiomic features, imaging-based features, but also the rich clinical data that we have in the VA healthcare system that we were talking about earlier. And so the goal really would be then at the point of triage at the patient's first lung cancer screening CT, if ILA is found, using those risk prediction models, we would be able to counsel those patients on the likelihood of progression. And not just patient counseling, it would inform what we would do next, right? So the first goal is to be able to develop a risk prediction model for ILA interstitial lung abnormality triage. And then the second goal after that is to actually define what the thresholds of action would be, right? A lot of these risk prediction models give us percentage risk, but then we have to be able to translate them to clinical actions. This is very similar to what was done with the Fleischner criteria for lung nodules, right? We have different thresholds of actions we take based on the size and the rate of growth of the nodules, and we're trying to apply those lessons to the ILA space. And so after we've established the thresholds for follow-up care, and that may look like continuing in annual lung cancer screening program, it may include things like getting pulmonary function tests. And for potentially really high-risk patients, it may include plugging them into a pulmonologist earlier. Those thresholds will then inform step three of the project, which is pilot implementation, starting in Houston, but then leveraging the National Lung Cancer Screening Program's framework to be able to expand that nationally. And it's something that providers are also asking us for, because there's a lot of primary care providers who get these results in their in-baskets, including the interstitial lung abnormalities, and are seeking guidance of what they need to do, because not all lung cancer screening is currently being done by pulmonologists. So it's a pie-in-the-sky dream. It's going to take us a couple years to get there, but we're hoping that it will not only help the VA healthcare system, but help us move the ILD field forward as well.
That all sounds fantastic. I hear risk prediction models, I hear AI, I hear radiomics, and melding all of that into our everyday diagnostics. That's music to my ears. Well, Bavika, this has been a great discussion today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Deji. It's really been my pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. You can also download our Amazon Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my flash briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Call and Edgin Soye. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.